Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wounded Blue Hour here on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton, 34-year law enforcement veteran, the author of several books, including A Cop's Life and the soon-to-be-released Rescuing 911, The Fight for America's Safety, and also the founder of the Wounded Blue, the national assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers, a nationwide charity that's helped more than 13,000 American law enforcement officers. On this show, we talk about all things regarding the physical, emotional, spiritual well-being of America's law enforcement community. And we always have a nice guest who is entertaining and also informative. He's waiting for us in the green room. And but before I bring him in, each week I talk about what I call our reality check. And the reality check for the American law enforcement officer is the violence that continues unabated towards the law enforcement community. I eulogize those officers who have given their lives since the last episode, and unfortunately, I have so many names to read, I'm sickened. So let's first start off with our reality check. Trooper First Class Chase Winston Redner of the Georgia State Patrol in Georgia. Trooper First Class Chase Redner was struck and killed while investigating a fatal pedestrian crash. At 10:30 p.m. on February 19th, a construction worker died after being struck by a vehicle while setting up a work zone. Trooper Redner was investigating the collision site and was standing outside his cruiser at 12:30 a.m. when he was hit by a passing vehicle. He was transported to the hospital where he died from his injuries. Trooper Redner served with the Georgia State Patrol for over 6 years. Trooper First Class Chase Winston Redner, Georgia State Patrol, end of watch, Tuesday, February 20th, 2024. Deputy Sheriff Charles Rivette, Montgomery County Sheriff's Office, Texas. Deputy Sheriff Charles Rivette was killed in a crash on southbound interstate in Centerville, Texas, 10:30 p.m. Deputy Rivette was a passenger in a patrol vehicle transporting an inmate from Oklahoma to Montgomery County when it struck a tractor trailer. Unable to stop, two tractor trailers crashed into the back of the patrol vehicle. The impact forced the vehicle into the northbound lanes. Deputy Rivette was thrown out of the vehicle and then was hit by a pickup truck. The other deputy, the inmate, and one of the tractor trailer drivers also suffered serious injuries. Deputy Rivette served with the Montgomery Sheriff's Office for 18 years. Deputy Sheriff Charles Rivette, Montgomery County Sheriff's Office, Texas. End of watch Wednesday, February 21st, 2024. Sergeant Nevada Krinke of the Sheridan Police Department in Wyoming. Sergeant Nevada Krinke was shot and killed while serving a trespass warning near 5th Street, Val Vista in Sheridan. Sergeant Krinke was transported to Sheridan Memorial where he succumbed to his wounds. The subject, who had a lengthy criminal record, fled and barricaded himself inside a residence. After a 30-hour standoff, the subject refused to surrender, attempted to flee, and was shot and killed. Sergeant Krinke was a United States Army veteran, served with the Sheridan Police for 6 years. Sergeant Nevada Krinke, Sheridan Police, Wyoming. End of watch Tuesday, February 13th, 2024. Deputy Sheriff Ronald Bates, Harris County Sheriff's Office, Texas. Deputy Sheriff Ronald Bates was killed in a vehicle crash while en route to Harris County Jail at 10 p.m. After finishing an overtime assignment, Deputy Bates was traveling on Travis Street when he lost control of his vehicle and struck a tree. He was transported to the hospital where he succumbed to his injuries. He had served with the Harris County Sheriff's Office for 31 years. Deputy Sheriff Ronald Bates, Harris County Sheriff's Office, Texas. End of watch Saturday, February 10th, 2024. Deputy Sheriff Robert John Leonard, Meigs County Sheriff's Office in Tennessee. Deputy Sheriff R.J. Leonard died in a single vehicle crash into the Tennessee River off the Blythe Ferry Road ramp in Birchwood. Deputy Leonard was at home when he took the call relating to a disturbance near the Highway 60 bridge in Birchwood. He arrived at the scene at about 9:48 p.m. and at 10:15 radioed that he had arrested a female subject and was transporting her to the Meigs County Jail. A few minutes later, dispatchers received an unclear transmission where Deputy Leonard mentioned water. The area is remote and rural, and it was difficult for cell phone signals and other radio traffic to go through. When he failed to respond to a status check, a search began. The next day, his patrol car was found upside down in the water with the female subject in the back. His window was rolled down, and he was not in the vehicle. His body was recovered at 6:30 p.m. on February 15th. Deputy Leonard served with the Meigs County Sheriff's Office for just 2 months. Deputy Sheriff Robert John Leonard, Meigs County Sheriff's Office, Tennessee. End of watch, Wednesday, February 14th, 2024. And two officers killed in the same incident. Police Officer Paul Elmstrand, Burnsville Police Department, Minnesota. And Police Officer Matthew Rouge, Burnsville Police Officer of Burnsville Police Department, Minnesota. Police Officer Paul Elmstrand and Police Officer Matthew Rouge were shot and killed after responding to a domestic incident. A man was convicted, who was a convicted felon, had taken several family members hostage, including seven children, and barricaded himself inside the home. Officer Rouge, Officer Elmstrand, two other officers had been negotiating inside the house with the man who claimed to be unarmed. After 3.5 hours of negotiation, the subject fired on the officers suddenly at 5:26 a.m. Two officers returned fire, wounding the subject in the leg. While Officer Rouge and Burnsville Police Sergeant were exiting the home, they were struck a second time. Burnsville firefighter paramedic Adam Finseth was shot while he was trying to help the wounded officers to an armored vehicle. The man continued to shoot at officers from an upstairs window. Officer Rouge, Officer Elmstrad, and paramedic Finseth were transported to the Hennepin County Medical Center, where they succumbed to their wounds. The sergeant was treated and released. The man committed suicide and was found deceased in the home at about 10:15 a.m. The investigation revealed the subject had fired more than 100 rounds at the officers. The hostages were able to escape safely. Officer Elmstrand has served as a sworn officer of the Burnsville Police for 5 years and previously served as a community service officer. Officer Rouge has served with the Burnsville Police Department for 4 years. Police Officer Matthew Rouge, Police Officer Paul Elmstrand, Burnsville Police Department, Minnesota. End of watch, Sunday, February 18th, 2024. And the body count continues as the war on cops continues. May they rest in peace. In addition to these officers who were killed in the line of duty, the month of January saw 32 officers shot in the line of duty. So the when I talk about how this is our reality check, this is the law enforcement community's reality check, that the violence continues unabated. Okay, let's get on with the show and bring in my guest. And I'm gonna pull up his bio here, and I'm only gonna read part of it because otherwise my eyes are gonna go crazy here. And he is my good friend Dan Murphy, and he is a retired NYPD detective. He is the co-host on a phenomenal podcast called Gold Shields with his partner, Tom. And he is also the co-owner and founder of a new company that is called Impact Solutions. And they've got a product that is gonna change some of the safety aspects about law enforcement. And we'll talk about that shortly. So let me give you a little background. Dan Murphy is a retired detective sergeant, NYPD, where he served for 20 years. His accomplishments there include 16 years as either a detective or detective sergeant, serving in such units as narcotics, organized crime, major case squad, Bronx Gang Investigation Squad, and ultimately the Joint Terrorism Task Force. After 9/11, his areas of expertise including RICO investigations of violent gangs, kidnapping, human trafficking, bank robbery, and counterterrorism, and the list goes on and on. And welcome to my show, Dan. And thanks for coming on.
What a pleasure, Randy. Thank you so much. It's great to see you again. And I really appreciate so much. I want the audience to know what you do. There's so much behind the scenes that the Wounded Blue does. And as I've gotten to know you, I've come to appreciate it. And you're doing great work out there. And anybody who's listening to this, if you get a chance, donate to the Wounded Blue. They are really, really saving and changing lives.
I really appreciate you saying that, and all your support as well. So let's talk about Dan Murphy for a little bit. Let's talk about your, mm-hmm. your where you grew up and what was it that led you to choose the law enforcement way of life.
Yeah, I grew up in a real blue collar working class section of Queens. Half of my neighborhood was factories, and I really had no idea about policing, except my uncle, who was very influential in my life, was with the NYPD for a long time. He had a 38-year career. And one day when I was about 19 or 20 years old, I remember we were at a family barbecue, and I had been a communications major in Queens College and saw that going nowhere. And he said to me, why don't you take the police test? And this was 1982. They were giving a test. Dating myself right there. But 52,000 of my closest friends took it with me. And I ended up doing really well. And within a year, I got hired. And I loved it. I gravitated towards it. I loved everything about it, the excitement, the camaraderie. This is a time when New York City was, I'll say, awash in crime as opposed to completely out of control because it eventually got there. But it was a really, really great experience for me right from the beginning. And I enjoyed every minute of it.
And you did 20 years. You had a bunch of different assignments. What do you think when you look back on your career now? What do you think was your favorite assignment?
It's hard to say. I would probably say the Major Case Squad as detective. Really, really enjoyed the work. Fascinating, involved cases, kidnappings, shootings and murders of police officers, other high profile cases. It was a chance to work among, as a young 10-year officer and detective, some of the most experienced and best detectives we had by far. I learned like a sponge. They were great. So got to work on high profile cases, got to really focus on stuff that was more complicated than the day to day, and learn my chops, so to speak. It was a great experience.
You know, you've continued to be involved in law enforcement even after your tenure with the NYPD. You know, working as a security expert and also staying involved by the creation of your podcast, Gold Shields, which is one of the top law enforcement podcasts in the country. So you've continued to be involved in one way or another with law enforcement. So let me ask you this. When you started as a police officer, I want you to compare the experience of being a young copper back then and how you mentioned something that's really interesting, that when you took the police test, 52,000 people took that police test. That is an astronomical number. And now, how many people took the police test in New York City the last time that you are aware of?
You know, it's changed completely, Randy. They used to do it every 5 years. I took the 82 test and 52,000 people took it. 1987, my partner in crime, Tom, took the test. 70,000 people took the test. It was a widely looked up to job, and there was a lot of reasons to want to take it. Currently, they have changed so much, and this is a reflection of society in general and the policing profession. They don't have scheduled tests as much as they have kind of rotating tests now. They have several a year. They can't seem to get the numbers that they'd like to get, they need to get. It's changed completely from being something you used to fight for and really work and try to aspire to get into, get yourself in shape, stay out of trouble, do your research, do your homework, go to school, learn about the profession, everything we could do to be ready to go into the academy. And now I don't know that it's viewed that way. And maybe it is by some, but it seems to have changed a bit from my outsider perspective now. It looks like it's a whole different whole different experience, I would think.
Well, as you know, nationally, law enforcement hiring is in the gutter. The numbers of people, taking the tests and applying have diminished to the point where it's now a trickle as opposed to a flood. And then we also have the same issue of retention. You know, I know that the NYPD has experienced more resignations and retirements in the last few years than ever before. They're literally setting records. So, unfortunately, this show is dedicated to the physical, mental health, and emotional health of America's law enforcement. So, how have you seen the current officers, because I know you're still interact with them, how do you think they are dealing with the pressures that they're going through now, as opposed to how you did as a young officer and your contemporaries?
Well, that's a great question. I think the pressures are a little different now. In New York, we always had a certain element of the public that didn't like us and gave us a hard time. We always had somebody, generally always had somebody in the mayor's office who would very conveniently throw us under the bus if it meant, good ratings or good press for himself. We were used to that, but now the rest of the country is starting to feel that on a much bigger level. So I don't think it's changed that much in New York to that extent, but policies pushed down from administrations really do impact how officers act on the street. If you're afraid that you're going to get arrested, if you're afraid that you're going to get sued every time you talk to somebody, if you're told that every time you have an interaction and even speak to somebody, you have to do a report, you're going to be inclined to do very little. And that's a shame. The public loses. The officers don't get the kind of careers and fulfillment that they sought when they took the job. And crime numbers start spiking. You have a combination of district attorneys who are flagrantly ignoring the law, deciding not to prosecute cases that have a significant impact on quality of life in various municipalities around this country. And that impacts the cops' morale. I remember in 1993, Giuliani got elected. He chose Bill Bratton as his police commissioner. In January 1, 1994, when they took office, it was a whole different feel among the rank and file of the NYPD. We had support. We had back. They had our back. They understood our job. They wanted us to go out and do our job. And it was a whole different feeling. And as a result, New York City had historic crime reductions, historic homicide reductions, massive increases in quality of life, businesses coming back, all that good stuff that everybody wants in their community. And it can be done again. Officers in New York that are leaving in many ways are leaving because it's an extraordinarily expensive city to live in. So most of us had a commute. I mean, I grew up in Queens and I ultimately had to move out to get a house. And my commute was extensive, as most people. And that gets tiresome after a while. And it's overly expensive. And then you have all the pressures and stress of wondering every day when you go to work, am I going to get in trouble for just doing my job? And so that makes people look elsewhere. And there are a lot of departments around the country that are happy to pick up an experienced, well-trained officer from the NYPD, give him a real salary, give him or her a real salary, let them live in a place that's easier to live in, and perhaps with a community that really supports them. And so you get the mass exodus. And a lot of times the burnout rate becomes so high, not because of the job itself. A lot of us love the job. It can become the administration, the brass, the policies, that constant state of wondering, am I expendable? And that's the sad part. And you hate to see that happen because, frankly, I love the NYPD. I love the men and women that are there. I love the people I worked with and the current ones that are out there right now. I would take a bullet for too. They have the best of intentions, and I want to see them supported. And I know you feel the same way, Randy.
Yeah, you're 100% right. But I've watched the latest thing you just mentioned, that this new paperwork regimen that mm-hmm. even the mayor tried to override the city council's demand that every cop has to do a report every time they have an interaction with another human being. It's the most absurd thing I think maybe one of the most absurd things I've ever heard. And the city council, who are so, I mean, the only word to describe them are leftists, cop-hating leftists, overrode his veto and inflicted more madness upon the police officers who are trying to do their job. It's really debilitating for those officers. They there's not enough paperwork in policing, right?
It's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. And if you try to imagine, if anybody who's listening to this has been to Manhattan as a tourist, as a visitor, and you walk around Midtown on a summer day, there are hundreds of thousands of people strolling around Manhattan that day. So even if you're an officer standing on a corner and you're not doing anything enforcement-wise, you're not writing tickets, you're not stopping people, even if you're just doing that, people will come up to you at least 20 times in the course of an hour. Directions, thoughts, can I take a picture with you, whatever, to just spew some anger, whatever it is, you're going to have interactions with, you have to hide to avoid that. So you're telling me that officer has to do 20 reports for conversations with people they will never have their head up from paper. That's all they'll be doing.
It's staggering, the stupidity of the, well, it's, you know what? It's really not stupid, because this is part of their strategy to keep the police from being police. So it's when I talk about, the mental, physical and spiritual health of law enforcement, this is an act against that. Let's move on a little bit. So you and your partner, Tom, created a podcast called Gold Shields. And it's a very, very high quality, well-produced show. What made you decide to enter into that arena?
You know, it's funny. Tom and I, probably a year and a couple of months ago, we were just having a conversation and we were kind of looking back on careers and contacts and people we know. And he just said out of nowhere, we should do a podcast. And I thought, well, I don't know, maybe, why not? And in the course of just a couple of days, we sketched out an outline of what we thought it should be. And the overriding sense was that there is so much negative press out there about the men and women who do this job. How can we put something on the chance to put a spotlight on people who do exceptional things for their communities, who do incredible work, and bring an awareness to the public that these are real people who have real challenges, but who are dedicated and committed far beyond the pale. The average person that's out there has a job, they go to work. If you take this job seriously, you have to go to work with a passion and a fire for it. And that shows in the work that gets done. So we wanted to bring some positivity to that, but we also recognized you have to give an audience some interesting stories. So we decided to have a true crime bent, because that would bring people in, hear the cases from the people who made them, hear the incredible careers from the people who live them. And also, it's funny how during the course of doing this over the first couple of months, the people we were meeting and the people we were talking to, all of a sudden it became clear to us that it's impossible for us to accomplish our mission with this show without including wellness, without talking about officer wellness and the massive stresses and problems that plague so many in this occupation, cause so much suicide, divorce, alcoholism, drug abuse, mental health issues, and it's none of their fault. It's simply by being a victim of an incredibly unique, stressful job that places you in situations where you're a frontline victim or witness to traumas on a regular basis. So we decided that that would be a part of it, and it's been an amazing journey. For example, we met you, other people who run other organizations who do incredible work for the men and women of law enforcement. And it's become a passion for us. We want to do something positive with a platform.
Yeah. And there's a lot of shows out there, a lot of law enforcement podcasts, some good, some not so good, but everybody is motivated to try and get the truth out And, you know, it's the truth tellers that that can make the difference. I've got to take a quick hard break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop. That's AmericaOutloud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Many voices, one freedom, united in the First Amendment. Our goal is to herald the voice of genuine liberty at AmericaOutloud.news, a place where you'll find the naked truth expressed with a patriotic heart. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
One Nation Coffee. One Nation Coffee. Patriotic, veteran-owned, very, very good coffee. I actually went down and visited their roasting facility and met with the folks down there, John and his crew, and they are amazing people. The coffee is delicious. You order it online, they bring it right to your house. You can get the ground coffee, you can get beans. I like to grind my own. They've got also got these, you know, the containers that you put in your Keurig or whatever that thing is called. So One Nation Coffee, go to onenationcoffee.com, order your coffee, and you'll get great coffee, and you'll be supporting a patriotic company that supports the Wounded Blue. So go to onenationcoffee.com. I also want to tell you about another product, and it's officerprivacy.com is the website. And what is officerprivacy.com? I'll tell you, it's really, really interesting. And I had, until I spoke with the owner, who is a retired law enforcement officer, Pete James, until I spoke with him, I didn't even know how much information was out there in the public sector of the internet about me. and about personal stuff, personal information, like where I live. I don't want people knowing where I live. Does any cop want people knowing where they live? No. And there's also other lots of private information that is on these all these crazy websites out there. And so what officerprivacy.com does, they only employ former officers or current officers, and they actually go onto the internet and scrub information off of these websites. And they took like 35 pieces of information about me off of a number of different areas on the internet that had that personal info. So it's not expensive. They know what they're doing. And any officer or former officer that I know should be concerned about the information that's out there. We all know that there's some of these people that are looking to damage law enforcement officers are very savvy, and they know how to dox people. That's a topic I wouldn't have even thought about 10 years ago. But go to officerprivacy.com and check them out. All right, let's bring our guest back in. Dan, come on back. So
there you go, I'm back.
We were talking about the podcast. Now, you know, you've been doing this podcast for about, a year and a half? Is that about right?
A year and a couple of months, yeah.
Let me ask you this. When you look back on this, I mean, it hasn't been that long, but what do you think, you get out of this as far as, this isn't a money-making thing. You do it for a passion. So what do you think this journey has been like for you?
You know, it's been very satisfying because so many cliches come to mind. But, you know, when you take your oath, when you swear to become as a police officer, you don't, at least I didn't, abandon that the day I retired. It's always been a part of who I am. You want to look out for other people, and that starts with your family, of course. But then your friends and coworkers, the people that you work with, and then those in your profession also dedicating themselves to protecting others. Tom and I both have a passion for doing that. We want to help the lives of officers any way we can. And even if it's one individual officer who listens to one of our shows and recognizes that there's an organization that we mention out there that could get them help, maybe one that's independent of their departments, so they don't have to worry about whatever issues may come up there, then we have done something good. And I can feel good about that. We want to give back. Honestly, police work opened doors for me. My career in NYPD allowed me to do and see so many things. I met U.S. presidents all the way down to the lowest crackhead in the street. I met everybody. I had a chance to interact with people I never thought I would, see things I never thought I would, travel places I never thought I would. And I want to give back. I want to see the next generation in a better place than we were when it comes to being able to take care of themselves so they go home and they're in a good place with their family, that they're grounded, that they feel that there is a support network out there, and people don't just retire and take their pension checks and run away and ignore them. Tom and I want to give back, and it feels really good to be part of that. And we hope we do some good with it. It's really about that feeling. I want to do something good for them.
I get it. You know,
I feel the same way, Randy. I know you well enough to know you are incredibly motivated to do that. And the Wounded Blue is an example of what you have done. And we need it. I mean, it's a profession that has so sorely lacked. When I first came on, the whole concept of asking for assistance for anything was viewed as weakness.
Right.
You were ostracized. You were penalized by your department. And it was a career ender. We have to change that. And it'll take a group effort. And it'll take active and retired people pooling together to figure out how do we change the stigma? How do we get the help for people? So that way, when you retire, when you hang up your gun belt, I'm old enough to say gun belt, when you walk away and you walk onto another life, you're able to do it with your head and your body and your family and your world intact. That's important because so many people have not had that experience. This job can crush you. It really can.
No, you're 100% right. You know, I was doing an interview, and they were asking, you know, what do the police really need to change the perspective? You know, a lot of the public is anti-law enforcement. We got to face the facts here, and much because of a media that's been complicit with an agenda that is anti-law enforcement. So when I was asked that question, I said, you know what, here's what I really believe. I said, the police don't need reinventing. They don't need reimagining. What they need is the best PR company in the country. That's what the police need, because it isn't we've seen the vilifying of law enforcement now for a number of years. I mean, beginning with the Obama comment of the police acting stupidly, that kind of was a moment that changed a lot of the environment for law enforcement, and then it got worse. You know, under his administration, with one of the greatest lies ever told about law enforcement, hands up, don't shoot, and
oh yeah,
you know, that was a watershed moment as well. And then we have followed by the insanity of the George Floyd debacle. So it's been one thing after another. It's going to take people like you and Tom and cops from around the country to change that perspective. It's always about telling the truth. And that's the power of what you're doing as far as the podcast.
You know, thanks for saying that. That word truth is very, very important to Tom and I. And we talk about it on the show. We won't let a guest come on our show and say things that are not true. We will not let them perpetuate lies. We want to know what you're going to say, and it's got to be verifiable and it's got to be true. For example, I currently live in the Minneapolis area now, and I have for several years, and I watched what happened with the George Floyd situation, and it sickened me. When I first watched the video, it looked really bad, but then I did what you're supposed to do, which is gather facts and deal with facts and truth. And I read the medical examiner's report, 8 Ways to Sunday, and I've read enough of them in my career as detective to know what they mean. And it is absolutely abundantly clear that Mr. Floyd, not to disparage him, but just to tell the truth, he overdosed. He had a sick heart and he overdosed. And the report is very, very clear on that. So we had on our show a reporter named Liz Collin, local reporter, and her husband, Bob Kroll, who was the Minneapolis Police Association president. And we had them on the show so they can talk about her book called They're Lying about this whole case. And what went down after that was an absolute abomination, a travesty of justice, and a lie that perpetuated what started possibly with Michael Brown and all these cases where the media jumps to a conclusion and they decide they're going to die with that narrative. Now, we have 4 members of the Minneapolis Police Department sitting in prison right now, lives ruined, when in fact they did absolutely nothing wrong.
I'm glad you brought Liz and Bob up today. I really recommend to all of our viewers and listeners, get the book. It's amazing. And then also, they also produced a film called The Fall of Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And you've seen that film, have you not?
Oh, yeah. And I can tell you, I had some conversations with Liz when she was writing the book about the Emmys report and some of my perspective. She did her homework. She's a really sharp reporter, and Bob's a very good-hearted guy who stands for the truth as well. And they did an amazing job on The Fall of Minneapolis. It actually shows you video that the city didn't want you to see, mm-hmm. that the media didn't want you to see. It talks about the facts of the Emmys report. It talks about reality versus the storyline. And we're all about that. And we need a return to truth and reporting. We don't have it right now. But any platform that can get the truth out there, we want to be that platform. So if anybody comes at us and wants to argue something, I'm content to have a discussion with anyone about anything we have on our show, because it'll be facts, not emotion. So we think we need more of that.
One of the things that I found fascinating is that the film which they produced has now been seen by more than 5 million people. That's extraordinary.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great. Good for them. You know, she works with Alpha News, a great organization. And bless you.
Thank you.
I think we need more people like her, dedicated to the truth. You know, it's funny. I often look back and think, when I was a young kid, I guess I was probably 18, I think I watched that movie, All the President's Men, about the Nixon Watergate scandal, which actually currently looks like an ice cream social compared to some of the corruption we see. I mean, it's like ridiculous what's happening now.
Yeah, for sure.
But I watched that and I thought, we have two crusading journalists searching for the truth. We don't have a lot of that now. We have a lot that are content to get the daily email with the talking points, and they run out, and that's what they put out. And we need to get away from that, because it's hurting our country. It's hurting our profession. It's hurting our public. We need to get back to that. So thank you for bringing that up. I'm glad you did.
Yeah, it's one of those things that every time I think about Derek Chauvin and those other cops that are literally rotting away in prison for something that they didn't do. I find it so discouraging, and it's discouraging. Every cop in America saw that, and every cop in America said, that could be me.
That's right. That's right. And I've talked to many who feel the same way. You know, I will say that there is a bright light in many ways, and you always want to look to the bright light. And one of them, I'm going to call him out by name. The Deputy Commissioner of Public Information of the NYPD is a gentleman named Tariq Shepard, who was an accomplished member of the department before he became a civilian deputy commissioner. In his role, he is actively seeking to educate the public on the great work done by the department and the individual people, who they are within it. We have had some great dialogue with him. We'll have some more this week. And I think we're going to be using our podcast to that end in some way, not to be simply a PR machine for them, but to give an inside view. This is what it's like. These are who the people are that do this work. People don't know what goes on behind it. But I will tip my hat to Tariq Shepard and the NYPD for really wanting to have the community see what happens. Don't walk around thinking what you think because you read something in a paper a year ago. Know the truth. And so we look forward to working with him and his team on that.
All right, I want to switch gears here a little bit. So as if you haven't done enough with your law enforcement career, your years with NYPD, then you're as a investigator for financial crimes for banking institutions. Now you're doing security for a church. You're helping them out. You're doing the podcast. But now you and Tom have created a product that can literally change and help law enforcement officers remain safe. I want to talk about that. This is your company called Impact Solutions. Please talk about what this product is and the genesis of it.
Certainly. You know, Tom and I, in our combined 50 years with the NYPD, neither one of us ever used our pepper spray on a suspect, ever. And that's because the culture in the NYPD at the time, I'm going back to 1984, I was handed mace. When I was in a police academy, they brought us out to the outdoor range. They had us stand at the 7-yard line, open your container, point your arm out, flip the top, spray it, put it back, now never use it. They essentially told us, don't use it, because you're going to impact everybody around you. It's going to be a mess. You're going to deal with some guy who's crying and screaming. You got to take him to the emergency. It's just not worth it. So we didn't use it. And we watched a couple of years ago the results of the George Floyd lie as it destroyed big cities and small towns, and a percentage of America was literally burned to the ground because of that lie. But I watched the officers responding to that with tools and tactics that sometimes work and sometimes they don't. Now, pepper spray works to the extent that you can spray someone in the face with it, and you will get compliance. But you have all that negative baggage with it. And what happens is you have hospital visits, which mean documented injuries. You have a cop off the road for who knows how long, maybe more than one. You've got civil actions that take place. Well, you hurt me. And you have unintended targets being hit by pepper spray. Now, the city of Portland, Oregon, sometime in the last year, settled a class action lawsuit filed by people that were unintentionally sprayed by pepper spray during riots in Portland, because you can't control it. It's not just target specific. And they paid out $14 million. And on top of that, I watched some cop in L.A., and I'm not putting him down, but the using the tools that he's using at a protest slash riot, shoot a rubber bullet at a reporter and hit him in the face. Now, these are the tools that are being given to the officers, so you can't blame them for utilizing them. What you have to do is think in terms of, why are we using that? I'm a big believer in what's the goal. If my goal is to gain compliance from somebody, how can I do that? But you also have to take into a fact that the public in 2023, 2024 is no longer going to accept an overly militarized response to a situation that may not require it. And it can look overly military, and they jump all over that. So if you throw a CS container into a crowd, you look like the military in a foreign country where the dictator rules and he just wants to wipe you off the street. In American policing, we can't have that optic. So Tom and I thought about it and we said, you know, there's got to be a better spray. There's got to be a better way to do this. Worked with a chemist, came up with something that is not pepper spray. It is not tear gas. It's got different chemical compositions. And what it does, what Impact does, is it will get you compliance from a person, but it will not cause all that negative baggage.
Before you go on with that, I want to. Yeah. There are many of the people who listen to this show are law enforcement, and one of the things that they know is that every time you deploy pepper spray, you're probably going to get yourself or your partner as well. And right. It's because it's so difficult, especially in a windy condition, it's uncontrollable. And then because of that, I was actually just pepper sprayed during an incident here just a few months ago by a gangbanger who pepper sprayed me while I was trying to intervene in a situation that was taking place. And I got to tell you, man, I was miserable for days. Mm-hmm. You know, the ambulance had to come wash my face burning. It's debilitating, and it's debilitating to the officers. Mm-hmm. So what you have created, I just wanted to point out why it is such a game changer, what you've created. Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks for that. You know, we have this desire to help cops do their job effectively with the least risk to them, criminal, civil, emotional, what have you. If we can do that, and we can also help them get the job done in an effective way, then we've come up with something special. So Impact, it does not cause respiratory distress, which is something that if you go on the websites of certain or major pepper spray manufacturers, they openly brag about. They'll brag and say we cause severe respiratory distress, as though it were a good thing. I think it's an unnecessary aspect of that product. You don't need that. If you've got the eyes where they're stinging and they can't open, if you've got them shocked, then you can gain compliance. And so this is what it's all about. If you close your eyes, you can't do much. If you can't breathe, I've got to take you to the hospital. Not to mention, does anybody in law enforcement want on their body cam and or the 100 cell phones that'll be watching you somebody screaming that they can't breathe? It's probably the worst optic you can get.
Right.
Right? I mean, honestly, it's the worst optic you can get. So not only do we not cause that, it is target specific and heavily water-based, which means gravity will bring it down. If I spray you here and it comes down into your eyes, I can walk right up to you, wipe some off your head, wipe it on my face, and it will not affect me. It's odd. It only works on the person that you hit.
That's wild. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And there's other aspects of it too. Number one, it doesn't reactivate. So like you talked about 2 and 3 days of misery. And we all know the gift that keeps on giving after pepper spray is you go in the shower and it's worked its way down your body. And now other parts of your body, more sensitive perhaps, are now miserable. So it doesn't reactivate. It doesn't cross-contaminate. It doesn't cause respiratory distress, and it doesn't take forever to clean up. With a bottle of water and maybe that much of it, just a little bit of a bottle of water, you can find yourself with a cloth and water in seconds returning to normal. Seconds to a minute or 2 minutes, and that's it. because really that's all you need. But it doesn't wear off by itself like a taser will after 30 seconds, you're just back in the fight. It wears off when I decide you're compliant enough. I like the officer approach. I approach you, I spray you with it. If you still want to be mouthing off to me or something, I can say, look, just put your hands behind your back, then I will clean you off and you'll be fine. And if anybody's videotaping this, they see, wow, that's kind of a fool, right? We liked it, and we're talking to a lot of departments, a lot of private security agencies who like it too. So we're going to be doing a big splash running around. We finally got our ducks in a row, and it's a big undertaking for a couple of cops to figure out the entrepreneurial world, but we have some great partners in it, and it's really been popular because we think we put a tool on a cop's belt that they can use and go home without having all that extra baggage about worrying about lawsuits. Because if you sue for the use of this, you're only suing for temporary discomfort as opposed to longer term, more diagnosed, documentable injuries, which is what we want to avoid.
So this is a brand spanking new product.
Yes, it is.
This is just being utilized by law enforcement, and of course getting the word out about that is going to be critical. How can people that are watching this show that are either in law enforcement leadership or play a role, how can they find out about the product and contact you?
Sure. The easiest way is our website. You can order off it, anything. Just reach out to us, give us your comments, let us know what you need. If you're a law enforcement agency, we're happy to send you a couple of samples for testing. We're happy to do some traveling for testing and demonstrations. Carry Impact, CarryImpact.com. CarryImpact.com is our website. Fully functional. You can read our safety data sheet that's posted on there. Learn more about the product. It's a fairly simple mix of some safer yet put together very effective chemicals. You'll be surprised what's in it when you read it. You'll say, really? That easy? Yep. Sometimes the answers are right in front of us, right?
That's
and it's
great.
Not particulate based. Pepper spray is. It goes in your contact lenses. You've got a problem. Our stuff, nope, washes right out.
Amazing. I think it's going to revolutionize some of the defense tactics that law enforcement, by giving a product like this and putting it into the hands of cops, it's going to make our cops safer. So that's a very exciting, product, very exciting for you guys that you're coming out with it. This could be a game changer for law enforcement. It could be a game changer for you guys as well as this product rolls out. So congratulations. Great stuff.
Well, thank you for that. And just so you know, Randy, one of the goals that Tom and I have with this is we're going to be spotlighting certain organizations throughout the year, and a percentage of sales during a certain time period will go to that organization, and Wounded Blue will be one of them. Like I said, we want to give back with the podcast. We want to give back with this. It's very important to us that this be seen as a product that is a part of the solution overall, as opposed to just a couple of guys looking to make a quick buck.
Well, I appreciate that. My organization does. And I hope you sell a whole lot of it.
when we highlight the Wounded Blue, we want people to buy like crazy. Yeah.
Well, the podcast, does that have a specific, if there are law enforcement people that are watching this that would like to become a guest on your podcast, is there a way to connect with you on that?
Yeah. Go to our website, The Gold Shield Show. No S on shields, although the show is called Gold. So it's The Gold Shield Show. We have a contact page. Reach out to us. We want to hear from you. We're always looking for good storylines. We're always looking to interview people who have something to share that we think will impact a wider. We have an audience that's fairly broad now. And frankly, we've been very surprised, Randy. We are currently being listened to in over 40 countries in every state in the U.S. It's amazing. I mean, the reach of a podcast is amazing, and we're looking to take advantage of that. And like you said, it's not a money-making thing, podcasts, but to us, it's kind of a calling. We really want to use this for the right reasons. So reach out to us, and we're happy to talk to everybody. We want to meet as many great people as we can through this.
Well, I want to say thank you for taking the time to appear on the show, and you and I will talk again very, very soon.
Yep, we will. Appreciate you, Randy. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And keep up the great work you're doing. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this and you haven't donated to the Wounded Blue, you're missing out on a chance to be part of something very big and very special. So woundedblue.org. And tell them Dan sent you for a special something.
Well, okay. Thanks, Dan. So I do want to talk a little bit more about the Wounded Blue before we say goodbye. Thewoundedblue.org. Thewoundedblue.org is our website. See who we are. See what we do. If you are a law enforcement officer or have been, and you're struggling with either physical injuries or you're struggling with psychological, emotional stuff, you're not unusual. You're part of a community that that has suffered in silence long enough. My team is made up of all cops who have been shot, stabbed, beaten, run over, screwed up, screwed over, faced serious post-traumatic stress issues and come out on the other side. And they know what they're talking about and they continue to serve. Some have become, you know, terribly physically disabled and still they continue to serve. So if you're struggling, please reach out to us. Go to thewoundedblue.org. You'll see a phone number if you just want to call us or fill out a contact slip and say, you know what? I'd love to talk to one of your guys. It's completely confidential. It's free. We're all volunteers. That's why it's so important that you donate to us because we're not getting money from anybody other than the people who care about law enforcement. So go to thewoundedblue.org. Hit that donate button. Even if it's 10 bucks a month, give what you can. Trust me when I tell you this, that money is being spent to help save law enforcement lives. Thewoundedblue.org. Now, if you want to contact me personally, if your business and you want to support law enforcement by giving to the Wounded Blue, just like Dan was talking about, contact me personally. That's randy@thewoundedblue.org. randy@thewoundedblue.org. And if you want to help, please call me or email me because I'll call you back. And I want to thank you for taking the time to enjoy this episode of the Wounded Blue Hour here on the America Out Loud Network and wherever podcasts are heard. So this is Randy Sutton saying thank you, stay safe, and remember this, never forgotten, never alone. That's the motto of the Wounded Blue.